Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
2-1 and marching on inside the playbook. Welcome once again here on American Airline Patriots.com radio. John Rook inside Patriots playbook for this Tuesday. And the Pats have the 26-10 win over the Atlanta Falcons in the book. And what that means now is you have your matchup against the Baltimore Ravens. And as we were just speaking a couple of moments ago with Paul and the guys, frankly, this is the one matchup that, to me, in the early season, I was looking forward to the most. I'd have to just hedge that slightly by saying I was looking forward also to the Tennessee matchup, and I still am. But with the Titans out to an 0-3 start to the season, frankly, I don't think they're as bad as 0-3 would indicate. But then again, let's hope that they win in the next couple of weeks. Otherwise, I don't think we want an 0-5 team in here. But the Ravens certainly seem to be everything, every bit of 3-0, and looking very much like a true AFC contender. And this will be a good early season test for the Patriots. Now, I heard somebody say, I don't know if it was on local radio here or if it was just some other thing that I happened to hear in passing, but I heard somebody say that, I know what it was. It was a caller to, I think, a talk show on WFAN in New York. And, the Jets fans were understandably still giddy over being 3-0 and still giddy over beating the Patriots a week ago. And, and I think they're certainly going to get a truer test of their mettle when they have to go on the road and take on New Orleans this coming Sunday. But they felt like they were, what's a good word for it? Ecstatic, I suppose, is as good as any. They were ecstatic over the fact that this team was 3-0 because the thought process going into the season was that this was an 8-8 or a 9-7 team at best. And I'm like, what? Weren't the Jets 9-7 a year ago? And so you're telling me that bringing in Rex Ryan and bringing in the Baltimore defensive philosophy and bringing in guys like Bart Scott and bringing in Mark Sanchez as your quarterback and you don't think that that's anything better than a 9-7 football team? I wasn't buying it. I really wasn't buying it. I don't know so much if that was just a lone voice in the wilderness or if that really represents how Jets fans feel. That, if we go 9-7 and maybe, compete for that, wild card playoff spot up until the last week of the season, we'll be happy. I'm not buying that for a minute. Not one stinking minute. My thinking is that, while Miami at 0-3 is probably coming back down to earth, and by the way, kind of sucks to be Chad Pennington today, doesn't it? If he's indeed gone for the year, I don't think anybody around here is going to lose any sleep and feel sorry for the Miami Dolphins, especially after last year's, shall we say, unexpected surprise. I don't think the Dolphins are as bad as 0-3 or as bad as this season may get, but I also don't think they were as good as 11-5 last year. The answer is somewhere in the middle. So this year is probably just evening things out a bit. And you know what? It usually always happens this way. The answer is always in the middle. Now, as far as the Jets are concerned, I think a lot of the Jets players themselves kind of looked like, we're not being considered at all because all the preseason hype was going through New England and the return of Tom Brady. And then to a lesser extent, whether or not the Dolphins could repeat, and to an even lesser extent, perhaps, T.O.'s arrival in Buffalo. So each team had a pretty good storyline within the AFC East, maybe with the exception of the Jets. I could understand, I think, to an extent, where they feel like they might be slighted just a little bit. I mean, they were getting plenty of run when they drafted Sanchez, and a lot of it was negative. A lot of people thought that Sanchez was taken too early in the draft. And obviously Sanchez is proving his worth now, and I think largely that's because Sanchez is no dummy. He's schooled as a professional by his coach and Pete Carroll. He was also surrounded at USC by potential pros, and he's surrounded by a pretty solid team. Let's face it, a 9-7 team that the Jets had last year. So you put those two things together, there's no reason why he can't have some success. Now, he hasn't yet faced the meat of the schedule. That could be starting this next week. They've still got to come to New England and play. But, yes, the Jets get some credit for being 3-0, and, yes, they did beat Tennessee this week. And Tennessee, all they did was have the best record in the NFL a year ago. But I think the Jets players, and this is part of the whole amount of woofing that they did the week leading up to the Patriot game, I think the Jets players are clearly playing with swagger, and they're clearly playing with a chip on their shoulder. It was put there by their coach, and the players are running with it. They're feeding off of it, and they're expanding on it. And it wasn't so much that, you know, he's bringing a Baltimore swagger with him. It was because, you know, hey, the Patriots have this going. They're talking about the Miami Dolphins, TOs in Buffalo. Nobody's yapping about you. So don't for a minute believe any legitimate Jets fan who says, you know what, this is all a bonus for us. We thought we'd be 8-8, 9-7. Don't believe that for a minute. I think internally, serious Jets fans thought that this team could certainly contend with the Patriots in the AFC East. Now, as far as number of wins, look at the schedule. 9-7 would be a good starting point, but I think the Jets were at least a 9-7 team coming into the season. They could be 11-5, 12-4 rather easily, especially if they go to New Orleans and somehow beat the hottest offense going in the NFL right now. It could happen. So just a little bit of a different perspective after week three's football games. And, the fact that the Patriots bounced back in a solid fashion should be somewhat heartening, I think, to Patriots fans everywhere. Your team is a better defensive team than I think anybody was ready to give credit for. It's not a complete product. It's not a finished product. And I said, I think, a week or two ago, and I'll repeat it here again now, I do not like the Richard Seymour move, but so far, I've been proven wrong to an extent. Anybody who didn't like the Richard Seymour move has been proven wrong, that this team is somehow figuring out a way to plug up the gaps. And maybe, just maybe, let's allow for the fact that the coaching staff and or the players themselves knew that this could be the case, that this team was deep enough and quality enough, especially within the defensive line, to allow a good player, maybe even a Hall of Fame caliber player in Richard Seymour, go with 1 year left on his contract because, quite frankly, we thought that there was more upside to keeping a guy like Vince Wilfork. And if that indeed is what happens, okay, then we'll all do mea culpas. And, you know, we'll all, you know, kneel at the altar of, you know, his worshipness Belichick, and we'll say, you were right. You were absolutely right. But that still doesn't mean we don't have the right to question the moves, because if you look at it pragmatically, that was not something you needed to do right before a season started in which your defense was already questionable to begin with, and, of course, we all know that championship teams are built defensively first and foremost. For the most part, there is a rare exception, like the greatest show on turf, although I would argue that Rams defense is pretty good too, but, you know, and maybe even, you know, one of the Patriots or two of the Patriots teams. But most of the time, by and large, championship teams built with defense. And so if you're going to give up a huge anchor on your defense and expect to outscore teams 35-28 all the time, you know, you live by the sword, you're also going to die by that sword. And it has proven that time and time again throughout history in the NFL. That's why this matchup, I think, with New Orleans and the Jets this weekend is so intriguing. You know, I think New Orleans probably has a better-than-advertised defense because their offense is so overwhelming. Man, I can't wait to watch the game. You know, obviously we have our own game here at home this weekend, but I'll be trying to keep as much of an eye on that game, and I'm sure a lot of other fans will be as well. And Patriots fans, any team that's ahead of you in the standings, I don't care how early it is in the season, you will want to keep an eye on the Jets scores from here on out. Just like you always check what's going on with the Bills and the Dolphins. And it's sort of ingrained around here. And I think that's because the AFC East, maybe with the notable exception of the NFC East, but I think the AFC East has the best interdivision rivalries in pro football. My own opinion, of course. I might be a little bit partial to that. But, you know, when you think about it, I mean, there's not another team in this division you like. In the NFC East, I know that to be the case. Cowboys hate the Redskins. Cowboys hate the Giants. Cowboys hate the Eagles. And of course, the Eagles hate the Cowboys. And you can kind of wrap around it. I don't know that you can really say that about any other division in pro football. Maybe that's just the Eastern mindset. And I think there may be some truth to that. That may be an East Coast bias, but frankly, I think there is truth to that. Now, there's a little bit more passion. Not that there's not passion in other pockets of the country, but there's just a little bit more, shall we say, vehement or vociferous passion in the Northeast or in the East Coast. Now, granted, the Cowboys aren't East, but they were a legacy team in the NFC East Division when it was Washington, Philadelphia, and St. Louis. And so they just kind of got grandfathered in when the new divisional alignment came out in the NFL. Not that way in the AFC East. Not that way. And I think we all know that. So you pay attention. Hey, every week when we have Russell Baxter here on Thursdays and we run through, you know, some highlights of the NFL schedule, we always take a look at how the Patriots' divisional opponents and where they are and who they're playing that week. Why? Because you care. I care. You care. I think most, if not all, Patriots fans are into that. They care about it. So we'll continue to do that here inside the playbook. I guess the overwhelming thought that I have as we kind of shift directions back now to the game itself on Sunday and try to put the wraps on this, and then we'll start to turn our attentions to Baltimore. But the overwhelming impression I'm left with after, again, I really like, by the way, much as I'd love to be with you on Mondays, much as I'd love to be with you post-game after the game is over with and get initial reaction, immediate, it's all emotional. Sometimes we say or mean things that we don't necessarily really believe just because you're caught up in the emotion of the moment. I think that's the great thing about this show and having this particular forum, because we've got a full, basically 48 hours to de-stress, right? To just sort of like let the air out of the bag and look back over the game somewhat analytically without your emotions and without your bias affecting your thought process. That's what I really like about doing this. And so, while this is Nitpick Tuesday, for those of you who are regulars to the program over the last 8-9 years now, Nitpick Tuesday, we purposely try to find things that went wrong. And it all stemmed from, actually, the very first season in 2001 when the Patriots were marching to the, you know, unbeknownst to us then, the Super Bowl. And things were going so well in the middle part of this decade, and the Patriots were running off 21 straight wins. Plus, you know, frankly, we couldn't find anything wrong to talk about. And so we would purposely nitpick on the stupid little things, recapping the game from the previous Sunday. And so Nitpick Tuesday just kind of grew a life of its own, and I think it's kind of a neat thing that we do here. So Nitpick Tuesday as it is today. I don't have too many nitpicks. I think you can certainly throw one Tom Brady's way because he clearly overthrew four or five receivers. A couple of them could have been potential touchdown passes. It's very plain to see that Tom is still not completely comfortable with where he is in the offense yet. Is he getting closer? Maybe. I'm not sure I saw enough that would tell me that, you know what, he's only a week or two away. He could be 5 or 6 weeks away. I don't know. I hope that that's not the case. But I will nitpick on Tom Terrific today. Some of you may think that is undeserved. Okay, that's fair. Some of you may be, you know, in Brady we trust. That's fair, too. I expect, you know, fans to feel that way. But trying to look at it analytically, the fact is that he missed wide open receivers. I mean, that's something that you and I might do. Not a Canton-bound quarterback. And again, yes, I get the whole knee thing and the whole injury thing and the whole you know, shoulder thing and the rust, and I get all of that. He's paid an exorbitant amount of money to not do that. We've never seen this from him before. He didn't do this when he took over for Drew Bledsoe in 2001. So that's why I'm nitpicking on Tom Brady today. I'm hoping for his sake and for the Patriots' sake that we don't see much more of that. I think we'll have to allow for an occasional overthrow or underthrow. Actually, you know what? We could take this a step further. You could actually say it's better that he's overthrowing than underthrowing. Underthrowing usually gets you in trouble with interceptions. Overthrowing means that he knows he's got to put a little extra oomph into it, probably because he's still not comfortable in the pocket. That's why you see the overthrows. And possibly because he's trying to compensate for a shoulder that still isn't completely 100% from Albert Haynesworth squishing it in the preseason. Okay, so my thoughts on Tom Brady. That's my one big nitpick that I have, you know, 48 hours removed from the game. The other one overriding factor that I am left with from the game on Sunday is the fact that this Patriots defense is surprising me every step of the way. I am yet again surprised by their ability to limit a team like Atlanta and Matt Ryan. They bent a little bit, not a lot. They bent a little. Didn't break. I thought they did a masterful job of keeping a body on Tony Gonzalez. Brandon McGowan got a lot of that assignment, not all of it. He got some help. But he did, you know, in many times that I noticed, as much as I can look away from the ball, because I obviously have to watch the ball, and the few times that I managed to do that, I think all but like one or two that I noticed, Brandon McGowan was there shadowing the guy. They were pounding him at the line, and they had somebody on him, and they would always have somebody come over and help. And there was always a shadow, usually on Tony Gonzalez, and I thought the Patriots did a great job. That allowed them some running room. It allowed Michael Turner some ability to create some yardage, which he did. Not a ton, but some. That allowed a guy like Michael Jenkins an opportunity once or twice, which he got. Fortunately for the Falcons, you know, the Patriots had enough of a rush, and primarily with the front four this time, so that's getting better. I think I noticed, God, I can only remember right off the top of my head, once, twice maybe, that I saw either a linebacker or a defensive back actually rush. So it tells me the Patriots were doing it with largely their forward push, which is good, but they were flushing Matt Ryan out of the pocket and he threw the ball away. So they never got the chance to allow the play to unfold properly, and to me, that's getting the job done. You don't necessarily have to have sacks if you can get pressure. Ask the New York Jets that. Because that's what they got on Tom Brady 2 weeks ago. You know, Brady's only been knocked down, sacked, what, once this entire season, so far in three games. That's not bad. I'm getting back to the Patriots offensive line. Let me stay with the defense, though. I'm left with a feeling of encouragement about the Patriots defense. I'm not sure how they're doing it, but they are getting it together. Gary Guyton is a glue type of guy. We said that a little bit about Gerard Mayo last year. But I think Guyton is the same type of player in that mode. He may not be as flashy as Mayo may be. He may not be as quick as Mayo may be. He may not have the nose for the ball like Mayo does. But the man doesn't do anything to beat you. We saw Dalis Thomas involved defensively. We saw Pierre Woods involved defensively from their outside backer spots. And frankly, I thought Lee Bodden had a very good game in coverage. I know he got beat for the one touchdown, but frankly, there was an outstanding play made. So, you know, I don't think you fault anybody. I think Bill even spoke about that in the post-game press conference on Sunday after the game. I thought Bodden had a great day. I thought Sean Springs had a pretty good day. I think Brandon Merriweather is turning into the kind of safety we all hoped he could. Whereas 2 years ago, everybody's saying, oh, Brandon Merriweather's going to be a bust. See, we're so quick to label people. We're so quick to label if something doesn't happen immediate. I mean, we got to get out of that mindset here, people. I mean, I know many of you who care about this football team, you know, you want to give guys chances, and I think that's good. But I think there are a lot of people who follow this team who don't follow it as closely maybe as you do that are ready to say, oh, just because a guy isn't playing or a guy isn't contributing means he's a bust. Now, in my estimation, a bust is someone who's had plenty of opportunities and still isn't getting it done. Lawrence Maroney continues to keep creeping closer to that phrase and that word. I'm not going to give it there yet. I was ready to call him a bust a year ago, and many of you know that. But, you know, Fred Taylor keeps turning out 100-yard games like he did on Sunday. Lawrence isn't going to get the chance this year, even if he stays healthy. Now, I think Maroney, and again, I don't have it in front of me, but I think Maroney has another year left on his deal. So if that's the case, you'll probably have another year left with him next season. That would be my guess. I'm sure somebody will email and let me know if there's a change in that, because I know a lot of you keep up with that stuff, probably closer to it than I do. So I don't know that they would get rid of him unless, you know, they felt like they could trade him. But frankly, if he doesn't do something this year, what's his trade value going to be? A sixth-round draft pick? Maybe. Maybe. So I think they hold on to him because he's still relatively cheap money. He's still on his rookie contract. But I'm left overwhelmingly with the impression that the Patriots' defense is better, in better shape than we thought it was. Brandon Merriweather, as I was getting off on the tangent about busts here, Brandon Merriweather is going to be a solid player, if not a star in this league. I'm now convinced that Brandon Merriweather has Pro Bowl ability. I don't know if he'll ever get there, but I think we're starting to see that, you know, he is picking up the mantle from Rodney Harrison. Rodney, I don't know if he anointed him officially or unofficially, but Brandon Merriweather is quickly becoming the emotional leader of that defense, and that is something that this team needed, especially losing Harrison, especially losing Teddy Bruschi, especially losing Richard Seymour, especially losing Mike Vrabel. We said this 2 weeks ago. So, you know, who on this defense can step up and be the leader to take and fill the void left by the departure of those veterans? And I said it would be Brandon Merriweather. I thought it could be Brandon Merriweather. He has not let me down, and he has not let you down either. Brandon Merriweather is that guy right now. I'll tell you what I really like about Brandon. He's you know, loosey-goosey. I mean, we're out there. A lot of you may not see this because you're watching the game on TV, but during one of the timeouts, this was, I believe it was still a 16-10 game, so it was still in the third quarter, late in the third quarter, I think. And Falcons had the football. I think this may have been after the kickoff, after they kicked the field goal to make it 16-10. And, of course, the fans are kind of grumbling a little bit because the Patriots had another red zone chance and basically blew it and could only kick a field goal. And I said to John Zanini, my spotter who's next to me in the booth, and to the clock people who sit next to me as well, I said, you know, Atlanta could go right down the field and score here, and as well as this team has played, all they need to do is bust one play, and they're going to take the lead. And I happened at that time, as I was saying that, look out of the field, and they're blaring some, you know, rap music on, and it had a particularly good beat to it. I don't remember what song it is. You remember what song it was, Jason?
What point in the game?
This was third quarter, about 16-10 lead. I think it was right after we kicked off, and I noticed Brandon Merriweather and Brandon McGowan both, who were the safeties in the game at the time, I noticed them both, you know, jumping and jiving and shaking and baking out there in the field. Yeah, this might have been it. Yeah, I think you're right. Is this in the playlist? It was this song, people. It was this song, and I looked out at Brandon Merriweather, and I said, man, you know what? I said, I started laughing a little bit, and I said, this is exactly what this football team needs. They need somebody to show some emotion and to begin, you know, getting it together out there. And McGowan was picking it up, and then I saw Pierre Woods join in. And I think it was Myron Pryor who was in the game at the time, who's the rookie from Kentucky, who I think is a good player as well. And they were, and it was like, it was almost like Dance with the Stars out there. These guys were getting it going. And unfortunately, I think a lot of you, unless you were at the game, you missed that because we're still in a commercial timeout.
Great song selection, I must say, if I do.
Pat yourself on the back. Don't hurt yourself. by the way, somebody asked me again. I'm getting off again. I'm getting off on a lot of tangents here today. Somebody asked me what the song is that you play after scores. Can you now tell me what that song is?
This is the second show in a row that this topic has come up, and I still can't say anything.
I know. Why can't you say anything? You play it.
I know. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Lord. Okay. Can you just nod your head for yes or shake your head for no? You don't know. It's Jon Bon Jovi, right? Oh, he's shrugging his shoulders now. Oh, my God. Okay. That's fine. By the way, I'm ready to rip the Cheers song, okay, that they try to play. I'm ready to rip it. That may be the single dumbest thing we've done in Gillette Stadium history.
Just need the fans to start singing the lyrics.
No shot. No shot in hell. Play the Vince McMahon song from the WWE. That's his song. No chance in hell.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no chance. Not with this crowd. This is a crowd that booed Christina Acra, okay? And she's drop-dead gorgeous. They booed her a couple of weeks ago. So I'm just saying, you know, I know what this crowd will do.
Cherry pie?
Exactly. I know what this crowd will do. I know what this crowd likes, and I know what this crowd will accept. I've only been around this crowd for 17 years.
So do I, but nobody seems to want to take my opinions.
No. And that's unfortunate, Jason. So you and I, unfortunately, are left kind of like shrugging our shoulders, like, what can I do? We have to do what we're told to do, right? So, all right. Now I got off on a tangent, and I can't remember what the hell it was I was talking about. Oh, I was talking about Brandon Merriweather. Okay. Like him a lot. How's that? I think he is going to be the kind of emotional leader that this team needs defensively. Now, that's not to say he won't have, you know, a game now and then where he gets burnt or he'll miss a tackle. Or, I mean, you know, he obviously had the little, bump incident, on the big play that the Jets ended up scoring a touchdown on, the only score of the game 2 weeks ago. And that's fine. You know, that's all human error and you allow for some of that. But, you know, I think, you know, he is going to be the kind of player you need. I think Brandon McGowan looks like he's going to be a good player, solid player. I do like Lee Bodden. It was a nice pickup. Sean Springs, we didn't even notice, really, Jonathan Wilhite being absent. You know, a late scratch. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment. We didn't even notice it. They were getting pressure. They were covering. They were giving help. Patriots weren't letting a guy like Tony Gonzalez, who has had big days before, they weren't letting him have a big day against them. And the end result was a 26-10 win. Now, getting back to the nitpickiness and the nitpicks, obviously Brady was my number one nitpick from Sunday's win. And I guess you really have to throw the entire red zone offense in as a nitpick. Because they continue to kick field goals as opposed to score touchdowns. So, because of that, it's still a work in progress. But you could kind of sense that, you know what, because they had the opportunity, because they were moving the football, because they did have 400 and some odd yards of offense, and they held Atlanta under 300. I mean, you know, that's a great sign. It's a positive sign. Now you've got to figure out what to do in the red zone. And a lot of that is probably Brady's business of getting familiar with his receivers. And I know that I heard at the tail end of PFW in the last hour, I heard them talking a little bit about some of the fans talking about Joey Galloway as opposed to a guy like Terrence Nunn. And, you know, I'm okay to give Galloway the benefit of the doubt, you know, especially over a guy like Nunn who wasn't drafted, wasn't even picked up by anybody. Even though, you know, he dazzled us, many of us, in the preseason this year. It was preseason. But, I mean, nobody has any confidence. Nobody has any confidence right now, especially Tom. Nobody has any confidence in Joey Galloway. How long do we let this thing go? How much longer do we allow himself to, you know, pull out of this? I'm guessing the Patriots are giving him, you know, his just due because of the fact that he is a grizzled veteran. And that maybe he's earned that chance. Okay. How much longer do we let it go? That's one of the things that I kind of want you to talk about today. Email address is webradio@patriots.com. How much longer are you willing to let Joey Galloway go as part of our Nitpick Tuesday effort here inside the playbook? And, of course, your other nitpicks, if you agree, disagree with my Tom Brady assessment, Lawrence Maroney. I thought it's hard to nitpick the offensive line. I think the offensive line had its best game of the year. So I'm not going to do that. Chris Baker made a nice little freelance move to get open for that touchdown pass from Brady. Tough to nitpick there. Like I said, it's tough to nitpick just about anywhere, to be honest with you. Unless you look at offense, specifically Brady and or red zone offense. It's just tough to nitpick. So there you go. Your thoughts on a Nitpick Tuesday, web radio at Patriots.com. The telephone number is 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. A lot of emails to get to. We'll pick up some from the tail end of PFW and share with you here. I want your emails on your nitpicks for this past Sunday. And a strange, strange story is brewing out of North Attleboro and why Jonathan Wilhite was not active for Sunday's game. If you're not aware of what was going on, or even if you were, there is an update to the story I'll share with you coming up inside the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You gone?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America, NA member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Battlefield
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you got.
Taking a break from all your worries
sure would help a lot.
Wouldn't you like to get away?
Sunday
want to go where everybody
knows your name, Baba.
Baba. And they're always glad you came.
Baba, Baba. You want to be where you can see.
Our troubles are all the same.
You want to be where everybody knows your name.
All right, so that's the Cheers song as we welcome you back inside the playbook here for a Tuesday. That's the song that gets played on the ProVision scoreboards here at Gillette Stadium.
Now, what features, the listener can't see
right.
is Matt Light opens it.
Right.
Andre Tippett and John Hanna are in it.
Yeah.
Adalys Thomas, Copen, Mankins.
Is Welker in it, too?
No, Welker's not. In it. Cheerleaders.
Yeah.
John Ratzberger from Cheers is actually
Cliffy.
In it.
Cliff Clavin.
Yep.
Yep.
And then a bunch of Patriots season ticket holders.
Okay. All right. So that's the song that they're trying to play, and they're trying to get everybody in the stadium to sing. And I guess they're trying to do this because everybody in the stadium at Fenway Park sings Sweet Caroline, before the start of the eighth inning. And, of course, it's a huge hit. That's what everybody does. You swing Sweet Caroline. And I guess this is the Patriots' answer to that. I don't know. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes.
I can see the pained look in Jason's face.
Do you want the other song that we've been talking about?
Yes, please. This would be the touchdown song, right? That one's got a better chance than Cheers does. that one's not bad. I think that'll just take a little while to catch on. But then again, what was the stupid song we played for years? That was Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Part 2 or whatever it was. Yeah. I mean, that took a while, everybody, to catch on. Of course, the Patriots didn't catch on to it until NBA teams had been using that song for like 20 years. And then all of a sudden it catches on in NFL arenas and NFL stadiums. So I think that one will probably actually catch on. And Jason can't say this because he's been told he's not supposed to, but I can tell you, that's a song that has yet to be released. Okay, it has yet to be released. Yeah, this is Gary Glitter. But there's a specific reason, though, why I think. Yeah, there's a specific reason why that song isn't used anymore. The Hayes song is because Gary Glitter. I think what was it? Was it? Sexual harassment or sexual
misconduct
charges with a minor?
Little boys.
With little boys? See, that's not good.
Twice.
No. So you can understand why people have kind of run from that in supporting that. And that's why you don't hear that song anymore. That song did have kind of a life of its own. But now you have a little bit of a taste as to what those songs are about. Touchdown song is yet to be released, which is why officially you can't say anything about it, or at least the Patriots can't and won't say anything about it. That being said, it is a John Bon Jovi song. So there you go. And I think it's This Is My House, This Is Our House, something like that. Obviously, you heard the lyrics. So as a denizen of Gillette Stadium, when you get to come to the games, those of you who are able to come to the games, that's what you hear being played after touchdowns. And you're basically privy to a world release every time that song gets played because you can't buy the song in stores anywhere yet. Can't do it. It's not released. It was supposed to have been released by my estimation here in talking to some folks. It was supposed to have been released the first week of the season, and it just got held up.
Next topic.
Okay. So there you go. That's the latest on that. Now, the story about Jonathan Wilhite is a little strange, to say the least. It was originally written by Shalice Manza Young of the Providence Journal. And then we've had the Boston Herald and now Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com pick up on it. But the Patriots cornerback told police that he pulled his groin Sunday morning. And, of course, Belichick did mention this in his postgame press conference and again yesterday, that it was a Sunday injury that caused him to be a last-minute, if not last-second, scratch from the game against Atlanta. And Will Hite told police he pulled his groin Sunday morning while running away from two people in the parking lot at his home or near his home. This is from a release, by a statement from the North Attleboro, Massachusetts Police Department. Now, the police department details this. See if I can read this here. The written statement is, on Sunday, September 27, 2009, the North Attleboro police responded to the Cumberland Farm store in the Attleboro Falls area of town after receiving a call from Jonathan Wilhite concerning suspicious activity. Mr. Wilhite stated that two subjects were in his parking lot when he arrived home. One approached him on foot and yelled at him. Mr. Wilhite became concerned and ran to the Cumberland Farm store where he asked the clerk to call police. He did mention that he had pulled his groin while he was running. The matter remains under investigation by North Attleboro detectives. That's the story. Now, originally, when the story came out earlier this morning, it was thought that this was Wilhite potentially fleeing from an alleged home invasion. But that has not been proven to be the case. In fact, the North Attleboro police say that it is not a home invasion instance. That he was, I guess, in this parking lot across from where he lives. There were two people, I guess, outside his home. They recognized him. They yelled at him. And he turned right around and left and went into the store and asked the clerk to call police. And that was the end of the story. Now, it kind of leads you to wonder, God, did he know these guys? Why else would he just, you know, turn around and take off running and pull his groin in the process? Strange, strange story. I guess now you can, you know, understand maybe a little bit better why some athletes feel the need to protect themselves. Not that it makes it right to carry an illegal arms like, you know, illegal firearms like Plexico Burris did, but you can understand now if, you know, on the surface is what it was, is two guys looking for, hey, we heard that there's a Patriots player that lived in this area, and they saw him, and they spotted him, and they wanted to, you know, do whatever. You can understand why guys get nervous. That's tough. That's a tough story. So we'll follow it for you and continue to let you know anything that we hear on this end, but that's the very latest in terms of what happened to Jonathan Wilhite on Sunday. Otherwise, he undoubtedly would have been in that starting lineup. And in his stead was Sean Springs, who got the start. And obviously, Springs had a pretty good game. Patriots defense at large had a pretty good game. But when it was asked of Coach Belichick, you know, why did Springs start, his answer was pretty simple, because he was the only guy we had. And I don't think he meant that as a slight towards Springs. It's just like they had no depth. Wilhite was unavailable. So that is the story on Jonathan Wilhite. If you have some thoughts on that, feel free to share. Webradio@patriots.com. A couple of quick notes again from week three in the NFL. It comes from our friend Russell Baxter at ESPN. Two things that I wanted to point out in particular. I'll mention a couple of others. But
Yoo-hoo, Baxter!
Two things I wanted to point out. Number one, Patriots have won now 16 consecutive regular season games against the NFC. That's the longest winning streak any team has posted against the opposite conference since the 1970 AFL-NFL merger. Think about that. 39 years now. 39 years since the NFL-AFL merger. And no one team from one conference has managed to beat other teams from the other conference more than the Patriots have consecutively. 16 straight times with this 26-10 win over Atlanta on Sunday. That's a pretty good streak. I don't know if that speaks to the overall supremacy of the AFC so much as it does to the overall supremacy of what the Patriots have done over the last few years. And those wins have come on the road as well as at home. The other thing I wanted to point out as we kind of open up the program today, talking a little about the Jets and their 3-0 start, is Russell tells us that Mark Sanchez has become now the first rookie quarterback to start and win his team's first three games of a season ever in the NFL. That just boggles the mind. Think about that for a second. The first rookie quarterback in NFL history to start and win his team's first three games of a season. Now, that's starting off on the right foot. And the Jets, of course, beat the Titans 24-17. That's an amazing feat. And I guess he's to be congratulated. I guess the Jets did their homework on the kid, huh? Because he certainly seems to be operating within the system, and you know, he doesn't have to be flashy, but he's getting the job done. And I think that really, to me, underscores, you know, his importance as a quarterback. The other note from Sunday doesn't have so much to do with the Patriots, but it's just an interesting number. And leads you to think that there could be a quarterback controversy brewing elsewhere, specifically in Philadelphia. Eagles beat the Chiefs 34-14 on Sunday. Kevin Cobb, who got the start at QB for Donovan McNabb, who's still out with a cracked rib. Cobb passed for 327 yards in that 20-point win over the Chiefs. That's his second consecutive 300-yard game. And so another NFL first. Cobb became the first quarterback in NFL history to pass for 300 yards in each of his first two career starts. Wouldn't you think that there would have been somebody along the line in his first two starts in the NFL would have passed for 300 yards? Apparently not. Apparently not. So I wanted to bring that up because, you know, they've got not only Michael Vick waiting in the wings, but Donovan McNabb ready to become active again. So they'll be talking quarterbacks in Philadelphia apparently for some time now. Man, alive. How about that deal? And this is kind of a quirky one. But when the Giants blasted Tampa Bay, and by the way, Tampa Bay is now my selection to be the new taker over of the worst team moniker in the NFL, since Detroit ended up getting off the schneid for the first time in 19 games, beating Washington. And believe me, it never hurts when the Redskins lose a game. But, you know, Tom Coughlin is 30 years older than Raheem Morris, who's Tampa Bay's rookie head coach. It's just the second time in the last 10 years that two head coaches have faced one another with a gap of at least 30 years in age. The only other time it happened was back in 07 when Joe Gibbs, who was 66 at the time, faced Eric Mangini, who of course was in his rookie voyage with the Jets, 36 at the time. So interesting. Interesting stats provided to us by our friend Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL research coordinator, following Week 3's games. And of course, Russell will have more goodies for us coming up this Thursday here inside the playbook. Let's see if we can get to a couple of emails here, shall we? And again, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number, and we're talking nitpicks here on a Nitpick Tuesday. John in South Carolina says, I live in South Carolina, can't make the games. I never hear the touchdown song. Can you play it on the air? Yes, we just did. Then he says, I want to pick on the sports media. From Mike Freeman's horrible article about Moss's lack of effort to Mike Florio's completely unsubstantiated article about Moss wanting to leave and go back to Minnesota. All right, let me backtrack here for just a moment, because probably there are some of you that do not know what this story was all about. ProFootballTalk.com is one of our favorite websites, one of my favorite websites. It's a favorite website of a lot of football fans in a lot of different places, simply because Mike Florio does a good job, and his staff of moles does a good job of, you know, getting the story within the story. And they do work with a lot of rumor and try to follow it up, and then they try to substantiate whether or not it's rumor or not. In this particular instance, wow, man, this computer today is just all messed up. I'm glad that they can, you know, change things up here on us before we, you know, sit down and actually try to do a program here. No, it's coming up. Here we go. All right. Part of the problem with this was, Let me see if I can find it here, the original story. Nah, he's got it down a little bit in the ways, so I'm not going to deal through it. Anyway, just to sort of briefly recap, Mike Florio wrote a story, or Mike Freeman wrote a story, and Mike Florio actually parroted it and included it on ProFootballTalk.com, which, by the way, had been picked up by NBC Sports. Mike Freeman happens to work for a competitor. About how his impression was, and they were talking about this on WEEI yesterday as well a little bit, how his impression was that Moss was just dilly-dallying and was not going full effort. Now he wants out of New England. He wants to go back to Minnesota because apparently Brett Favre sent him a message and said, hey, why don't you come back here and finish what you started and I'll stick around and yada, yada. It was just really all rumor and innuendo and absolutely totally and completely unsubstantiated. And I don't know where Mike Freeman could have picked up on this. And if he was sold a bill of goods, somebody sold his butt right down the river. It could not be further from the truth. And to have Mike Florio pick up on it on Pro Football Talk, which then again gets picked up by NBCSports.com, well, then that obviously, because of the size and the stature of the media picking it up, it got some credibility. And honest to goodness, I did not even give it any credibility at all when I heard it. And I won't give it any credibility at all because it just could be further from the truth. I mean, Moss had a great game, but Moss was not dogging out there. I don't know what kind of game they were. I don't know what they were looking at. I'm not sure what anybody was looking at. That's why I'm just so incredibly puzzled by what was written and picked up on ProFootballTalk.com. At any rate, let me get back then to I didn't do a great job of recapping for you in case you're wondering about it, but you know, you can take the time to go to PFT and look at it, and then you make your own decisions about it. I've just kind of made you aware of it if you were not. He says, granted, not all sports media goes overboard, but for goodness sake, if you watch the games, you can see how much Moss is contributing. Not just catching the ball, but blocking and setting up other receivers. I have seen Moss correct both Watson and Edelman to keep them out of illegal formation penalties. So my nitpick is sports media. With all the stories going on right now, they have to make stuff up, making conspiracy theories that make the nuts and tinfoil hats look sane. That being said, Maroney is injured again, so I'm officially let down with him. On the plus side, our safeties are playing to win. Oh, good job out of you here, John. He actually sent me the link. So let me see if I can find the link here, and I'll see if I can do a better job of kind of recapping it. I got it right here. It's right here. Got it. The link that was written by Mike Freeman and then picked up by ProFootballTalk.com. We just got to wait for the link to load here. This new column regarding it says, we read with great interest Mike Freeman's new column regarding the efforts or lack thereof of receiver Randy Moss during the Sunday's 26-10 win. Freeman of CBSSports.com, and again, a direct competitor of NBCSports.com, chronicles with great detail the return of Randy's classic lollygagging. Per Freeman, he says, Moss didn't block on running plays, and often the men he was supposed to impede ended up making the tackle. On pass plays not designed to go his way, Moss jogged off the line of scrimmage, letting the safeties know that there was no reason to worry about Randy running past them. How he knows that is just... was he there on the sideline? Did he actually hear that conversation between Randy and the safeties go on? Randy, the bottom line is Randy still caught 10 passes for 116 yards. Coach Belichick even talked about Moss's performance in the postgame. He goes on to say here, what gives? In April of 07, the notion that the Patriots would want Moss on their team was unthinkable. He was the exact opposite of everything for which the organization stands. So Moss was on a short leash. One false move, and he would have been gone. Rumors snaked through the league early in September of that year that Moss was possibly in danger of being released. Though no one took the rumors seriously, the intended audience consisted of one person, Moss. So now that he enjoyed the best season of his career in 07, kept his head down and mouth closed during the lost season of 08, he waited for 2007 Part 2 to unfold this year. He realizes the switch can't be flipped as easily as he thought. It's possible that Moss isn't deliberately taking plays off, but that he merely has retreated to his nature now, that he has the attention span, and now that he has attention span that has expired. But it's also possible that Moss wants out, and that's his way of making it happen. That's just... and again, Florio goes on to say it's pure speculation, but it comes from our basic understanding of how things are in the NFL and how things get done. Despite Sunday's uncanny last-second catch from a little-known player whom the Pats jettisoned before the season, Brett Favre knows he needs a field-stretching receiver in order to duplicate John Elway's ride into the sunset. And Favre knows the perfect man for the job. Favre has openly lobbied for Moss when Favre played for the Packers. So what better way to fulfill his repeatedly denied yet undeniable desire to stick it to Ted Thompson than by finding a way to bring Moss back to Minnesota? Now, the update to this story is, of course, and I think most Patriot fans realize this, is that Moss was dealing with a back injury during the game that left him struggling, left him with a lot of pain. In fact, we could even see during a couple of timeouts Moss being stretched on the sidelines. He was on the injury report last week, but I guess Mike Freeman failed to pick this up. The guy couldn't be a bigger boob in the media. He could not be a bigger boob than he is right now for what Mike Freeman of CBSSports.com did. You know, and Mike Florio, for as much as I love his site and I love his column, and yes, he did write the update talking about the back injury, but basically parroting that and causing, you know, the pro football world, you know, to start, you know, running with rumor again yesterday. I mean, you know, he deserves half a boob on that one, be quite honest with you. And I realize, you know, the website is called ProFootballTalk.com, and the daily rumor mill is in big letters, big graphic, and you click on it right at the top of his website. And that's exactly what it is. It's a rumor mill. It's not necessarily fact. It's what people are saying. It's what people are talking about. So let's keep that in mind. We'd have to
straight
keep...
cash, homie.
Yeah, straight cash, homie. So anyway, that's the story behind the whole Randy Moss instance, and you're up to date on the whole Jonathan Wilhide story, and thank you, John Howard, for you know, getting me all up in arms over the, you know, the stupidness of some of our media members here and sending the links to those stories, and you can go check it out yourself if you like on down the line. Hello, Brian Lowe.
Hello, John Rook.
What's happening, B?
You know, hanging in there.
Yeah?
You know, on Moss, the question I always have when I hear something like, oh, Moss doesn't block, first of all, I can't tell you if he does or not. I'm not watching every single play. It's hard to watch what one specific player is doing in every play. But what I always like to ask someone who says he doesn't block, how many wide receivers do you know of in the NFL who block on every play? I mean, Hines Ward always comes to mind as a guy who has a great reputation for blocking and for being a good blocking receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to give validity to a Randy Moss lollygags on plays that aren't being thrown to him, I think it needs to be told in relation to what other wide receivers do. And unless you can back up an argument with that, like that, with here's an example of 15 other wide receivers who block better than Randy Moss, which I don't think Mike Freeman did, unless I'm mistaken, I think you need that perspective. You need, okay, how bad is he in relation to other wide receivers if you think he's so bad? And I think he had a gutsy game, considering the back injury, and he had a lot of over-the-middle catches that maybe Wes Welker would typically have. My first instinct a few times when there was a play in the end zone that was definitely overthrown, but my first instinct was, huh, Moss could have probably dove for that one. He maybe could have given a better effort. And then I thought to myself, they probably told him, because he's so valuable to this offense, don't go nuts on a play like that. It's not worth it for you to screw up your back anymore in order to make what would be an unbelievable diving catch on a ball that you probably wouldn't be able to reach anyways. So I think it was a gutsy performance. I'm not in any position to say he was lollygagging, not blocking on certain plays and all that, because I'm not watching that, and I don't think Mike Freeman is either, and I think we need to know, if you're going to make that claim, how much worse he is, how bad he is in relation to other receivers.
Yeah, I just thought it was a pretty poor job of interpretation more than anything else, and somebody feeding him a line of crap, and he decided to roll with it.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So.
And I think he was here at the game, but I don't
was
think...
Was he here?
I don't know if I know exactly who he is, but I'm pretty sure I knew. I'm pretty sure I did point him out.
Because I didn't see the media list, so I wasn't sure. So he was here covering the game.
I believe so.
So that would have had to have been then his interpretation.
Yes.
Of what he saw Moss doing on the field watching the game. If he had just looked at his notes in front of him, he would have known that Randy had a back problem.
Right. And that's a major part of the story on talking about what Randy Moss did in that game on Sunday. Now, maybe Mike Freeman came here with a planning on doing a Moss story and literally watched him on every single offensive play. And if that's the case, then I would hope that there'd be examples, multiple examples, of him lollygagging. But it still needs to be said that he was questionable going in with a back injury. You know, not a toe injury, not a, you know, fingernail injury, a back injury, which, you know, like you said, he was seen stretching, being stretched out on as often as could, as possibly could be. That needs to be said in a story like that.
You know, I guess it's possible that maybe he got tipped. You know, whether Favre, if he knows Brett Favre, maybe Favre says, hey, you know, it'd be great if we could get a guy like Randy Moss back here. And, you know, I've sent him a couple of texts or emails or called him a couple of times. And, you know, we've talked about it. And so maybe he wanted to come and see if there was any truth to maybe what was being fed to him. And he goes and he observes this and he's like, wow, I got a story here.
And you know what? If that's the case, that's fine. That's fine. Randy Moss will only be playing for one team in 2009. And probably in 2010.
Yeah.
And I don't think Brett Favre is going to be on that team.
No, I don't think so either.
Greg Lewis was cut and joined Minnesota, and that's one thing. Randy Moss is not going anywhere. And unless Brett Favre plans on playing four, five, six more years, and Randy Moss is on a different team at that point, they reunite, great. Or unite, great. It's not happening this year.
By the way, that was a great catch that Lewis had.
Unbelievable catch. And
why can't we get guys like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Semi-fluky, but I'll tell you what. I thought Greg Lewis... I certainly outplayed Joey Galloway in training camp.
Yeah,
and
I did too.
But I also never really felt as though it should be an either or. I thought there'd be room for Joey Galloway and Greg Lewis because I don't think they're that deep at wide receiver. So it's easy to say after Greg Lewis makes this catch that, well, why the Patriots get rid of him and all that? I didn't think that it made sense to get rid of him in the first place, unless there's something that we don't know about that went on behind closed doors, behind the scenes. I thought there was room for Lewis and for Galloway on this team. I thought Lewis was ahead of Galloway in terms of picking up the offense and a rapport with Tom Brady. I wasn't necessarily willing to give up on Joey Galloway. I didn't think it had to be an either-or, but I think they could use Greg Lewis. I think they could have used him a month ago, and I think they could still use him now.
Speaking of Galloway, Robin sends an email here talking about Galloway. Robin in Alaska. I'm willing to stick with Galloway up until he single-handedly costs us a game. Why am I willing to give Galloway so much slack? Who else is out there? Seriously. Nothing is known about none at the moment. Lewis was picked up by the Vikings. Ventrone is on the Browns. Sure, guys on the roster like Edelman and Aiken could get more reps given to them, but really, how much more do they really have over Galloway? Right now, maybe it is best that we just stick with the devil that we know.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for that because, as we've seen with different guys, and Joey Galloway is the most extreme and the most recent example, it's not very easy for a wide receiver from the outside to come in and pick up the system. That's why they're willing to give a guy like Edelman a chance to grasp the system. They're gonna be patient with guys. I think they're gonna be patient with Joey Galloway. I don't think they're on the verge of cutting ties with Joey Galloway because, hey, even though he's a 15-year veteran, maybe this truly is the most complicated offense he's ever been a part of, and he needs more than three games and whatever number of months it's been since offseason programs began. Maybe he needs more, and maybe when they watch the film, they see more than we do with our naked eye as to how where he's at in picking up the offense. So I think while a lot of fans would probably applaud a move to cut Joey Galloway and sign another veteran who's out there, you know, Amani Toomer, for instance, I'm just throwing out a name of a guy who I know is out there, a veteran, I think it would end up being detrimental to the team because you've got to figure Amani Toomer or anyone like that who comes in on September 29th has a much steeper learning curve than Joey Galloway. I don't think we're going to see them get rid of him. I think they need him, and I think they're willing to put up with some more growing pains to get the end result. Now, I also feel as though if they had felt that this guy was hopeless in the system, they would have cut him long ago. I really feel that way. Granted, there's money issues, there's signing bonus issues and all that. But I think what we've seen with this team is that money, and if they've given up a draft pick for a guy, they're willing to admit the mistakes. And if they felt that this guy was hopeless, if they felt Galloway was hopeless in this system, and Tom Brady felt the same way, I really do think they would have cut ties with him by now. I think they have hopes for him. I think they're willing to deal with the growing pains, and it's been ugly. Trust me, it's been ugly. And, you know, they're just hoping that learning curve continues to proceed on that learning curve, and by week 4, 5, 6, you know, he's much more in the mix and is able to make those catches that he's been dropping or make crisp routes on routes that he hasn't been running well.
We'll continue with your emails, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number, on a Nitpick Tuesday. This one comes from New York, doesn't leave a name. But he says, I live in New York, and I have to hear all the Jets fans saying we're 3-0. Should I be worried about the Patriots not making the playoffs? Also, should I be worried about the defense and Tom Brady? Well, we kind of went over this in the opening hour of the show. I don't think, first of all, that, the Jets fans, you can understand why they would be, excited about 3-0, because they probably didn't feel like they would be 3-0. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2-1, but, I mentioned at the top of the show, Brian, that quite frankly, I didn't think the Jets were. I mean, I think the Jets were probably a little bit better than people gave them credit for. It was a 9-7 team a year ago anyway, and then, of course, they made some pretty good moves, I thought, in the offseason, but they weren't getting a lot of the preseason hype simply because Brady's coming back, T.O.'s in Buffalo, and, oh, yeah, the Dolphins, were 11-5 last year, and so that put probably a pretty good size, chip on their shoulder to start, which may have a lot to do with the fact that, we saw heard the woofing, before our game with them, and then it's kind of kept up. So the fact that they're 3-0 isn't a total shock to me, number one. Number two, worried about the defense? No, because the defense is in a lot better shape, I think, than we gave it credit for, as I spent talking about in the opening hour. Tom Brady, that was my number one nitpick. And I realize it's somewhat sacrilege to nitpick, Tom Terrific. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that, he's overthrowing some targets that, you and I could overthrow.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on Brady because I felt it was sort of a 50-50 thing as far as drops versus Brady being ineffective and overthrowing guys. And I think it's pretty clear that he's simply not where he needs to be yet. He knows it and everyone knows it. But I also think, we might have gone in with higher expectations. I don't think it was reasonable to assume that Brady would be right back to 07 level quite yet. I think what's most promising about Sunday is that despite the fact that the offense, especially the passing game, didn't have great flow to it at certain times, and Brady didn't have his best outing, the fact that they still scored 26 points, that's a great sign that this offense is getting closer to where they need to be. In time, they'll be better than 1-for-5 in the red zone. In time, Brady will be better than, 55% passing, and he'll hit some of these guys that he's overthrowing. I just think it still takes some time, and I didn't think it would be all that smooth right off the bat. But we're seeing signs that they're going to be okay. As far as the Jets, I think that when you look at their 3-0, their 3-0 is pretty good. They've beaten three teams that I think a lot of people felt were playoff teams going into this year: Houston, Tennessee, and New England. Now, as of right now, I don't think Houston's a playoff team, and I don't think Tennessee's a playoff team. But at the time that the Jets played those teams, mm-hmm. and you got to wait until December and see what their records are, at the time the Jets have played these teams, we're talking about three teams that were pretty roundly thought of as playoff teams, if not division winners. That's a lot better than like the Denver Broncos 3-0. They've beaten Oakland, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. I think the Jets are the type of team that, at worst, are going to be in every game. They're going to be in every game because they play great defense. They have a poised rookie quarterback, a la last year's Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan, and a pretty good running game. And they're going to be in most games. They still haven't played Buffalo. They still haven't played Miami, two teams that are looking like they're pretty bad this year. Right. Now they play at New Orleans this week. That's going to be a tough one for them. But I still think if Buffalo's offense was able to sort of halt New Orleans' passing game, I think the Jets are going to be able to do so as well. So I think it's too early to start talking about, are the Patriots going to be looking on the outside looking in as far as the playoffs? It's too early to say that. They're going to be in the mix on the playoffs, and I think they still should be considered division favorites, despite being a game and a half behind the Jets right now. I think it's too early to count the Patriots out as a playoff team. I think it's too early to count Tom Brady out as a capable quarterback on this team.
Chris in Stamford, Connecticut says, who will end up being the playmakers on defense, offense, and special teams? Will the Patriots sign a kick returner to get the ball beyond the 20? I like this team a lot, but I'd love a huge play once in a while. I was just thinking that was the other potential nitpick.
Special teams.
Not only are they a little bit soft, on other teams returning, but our own returns aren't putting us in good field position, to be honest with you.
I agree with you. On coverage and on returns, they're just not getting the job done. And I think they're ranked – I was taking a look at the rankings. I think they're ranked last in one of the return categories, I believe, and they're pretty low in some of the others. And maybe we've underrated the loss of Larry Izzo. Maybe there's in combination with the loss of Brad Seeley. I mean, Scott O'Brien came in with a pretty good reputation, and I'm not willing to, write him off just yet, three games in, but they lost their special teams captain. They lost their longtime special teams coach. They lost guys like Kelly Washington, who made a pretty good impact on special teams. I think there might be, you know, that may have been, we talked so much about how much of a loss they've taken on defense. I think maybe we've overlooked how much of a loss they've done on special teams. Now, you know, where are the fixes? I don't know. I'm not the brightest guy in the world when it comes to analyzing special teams play. Jason, is that, I could see Jason stirring right there when I said, probably just when I said I'm not the brightest guy, he's probably got that clip already ready to go for the PFW
Save
guys.
That one for later.
Save that one for later, you know, fantasy show, PFW guys. I'm sure we'll hear that one again. but I think maybe we underrated the some of the special teams absences. So definitely that's a nitpick. That's starting to become a trend. Really losing the special teams edge each and every week. Some key penalties they've had, including by the new captain, Sam Aiken. It's been a struggle on special teams, and that's an area where if they could win the field position battle or put a better dent in the field position battle, that'll definitely help them going forward.
Let's see what else we have here. A couple of other items that I wanted to share. He also mentioned in his email here. Well, now the computer's just giving me all kinds of heck today here. He mentioned in his email playmakers on defense, and I spent the opening part of this hour talking about. I think Brandon Merriweather's coming into his own. He's getting ready to be the kind of emotional, if not physical, leader that, you know, guys like Rodney Harrison and Teddy Bruschi, you know, have been in the past. And he's not quite ready to assume the entire mantle, but, you know, I think I'm seeing steps toward his arriving there.
Yeah, he to me is the guy to watch. I think he has it in him. I think last year we saw some of that with, you know, the strip sack he made in Seattle. I think he's the guy to look at as far as the up-and-coming playmaker on this team. The problem is, on the whole, on this defense, this defense just simply does not make those big game-changing plays. They did cause that fumble to Michael Turner the other day. That was a good sign. They don't have an interception yet on the year. I think they have a long way to go to becoming a big-play defense, and that's something that could come back and haunt them. But I think Brandon Merriweather is a key guy there, and I'd like to see the cornerbacks continue to play as well as they did the other day in shutting down Roddy White and Michael Jenkins. Or Jenkins are really limiting them. I think the secondary has some big play capability in them. We got to see it really unfold on the field.
Phil in Austin, Texas, sent a little funny here.
Oh boy,
it's not entirely PC.
Oh boy, Jason, get ready with that delay.
Yeah, you might have to get ready with the delay button. He said it's a little joke. He says it's the convenience store manager speaking on Jonathan Wilhite. He said when asked how long Wilhite's injury will keep him out of the 7-Eleven, the store's manager Sunil Gupta said that Wilhite is day to day.
Not bad. It's not that off color.
I chuckled over that.
Chuckle. I heard you chuckle, and I didn't think you were laughing at me saying the defensive playmakers
right
there.
No, it's all right. By the way, Phil, I enjoyed Austin immensely a little over a week ago. Okay,
just
say that. Yeah, it's a good place to be.
Are we talking about your son again?
No, not at all. Why, are you tired of that?
No, I thought we were going to have to do our Texas geography again.
No Texasography? No Texasography today. Let's see, what else? Oh, D from Michigan says, I just downloaded the desk site. Extremely cool. It's easy to use and so far has taken me everywhere I've tried to access. Congratulations on the organization taking yet another successful step forward. Okay, that's from Deanna. I haven't done that. Of course, then my computer doesn't have the memory to be able to hold it, so... I haven't tried that yet.
It is actually pretty cool.
Is it? You've done it at home?
No, I have a Mac at home, so it doesn't work on a Mac. I did it here.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Cool. Ross in London, you're going to be in for a shock, and I feel sorry to break it to you, but we don't have fried dough over here in the UK. Let's just say it's a very American food. Are you going to the UK? You will be, right?
As far as I know, that's what I've been told. Okay. That is what I've been told. Looking forward to it.
So Patriots today will be represented in the UK.
Oh, sure. Sure, yeah. And... looking forward to it. I'm.
What are we doing with Patriots.com radio that week, Jason? Are the guys going over early?
We have to worry until Friday, probably, right?
Yeah, I think from what I've heard is you'll be on the air Thursday afternoon. I think the PFW guys will be on. We may need to juggle the fantasy lowdown around a little bit.
And let's be honest here. All the rest of the programming will revolve around what we do with the fantasy lowdown. Just setting your expectations there, John.
Of course.
We set the schedule for the fantasy lowdown. We fit all the pieces in. I joke with Eric Scalavino all the time. Hey, how's the pregame show to the fantasy lowdown? when he comes in before.
Does he?
Before,
yeah.
No, stop telling lies. You are an habitual liar.
An habitual liar.
We even had an Eric Scalavino visit during the Fantasy Lowdown last week.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Eric
He stumbled
it.
Upon here because he lost his cell phone or something, but he still stopped by.
And did he contribute to the program?
He was on the program, John.
He was on
the program.
Okay.
Did he contribute? Separate story.
I see.
Okay. Eric made an appearance on three programs that day. He hit the home run.
That's impressive.
And the only reason he was on the Fantasy Lowdown was because he forgot his little windscreen on his microphone.
That's what it was. And so it was a little bit of a problemo?
Yeah, he doesn't like sharing his windscreen with the EEI guys.
The next step in Eric's plan to dominate Patriots.com radio is he's going to come in here during the 6 p.m. to midnight replay portion of it and come and just interject with live sound bites within it so he can be on six straight shows.
I'm not doing it with you. No.
Ooh. We don't need to hear that.
No, probably not. Stripper sends a note. He wants my prediction for OU at Miami this week. He says, I'm sitting 7th row, 40-yard line OU side. Well, there's a shock. I didn't think he'd be on the Miami side. I think that'll be probably the best game of the weekend, quite frankly.
And Bradford, they're saying?
Well, he's trying to get, I guess, clearance for the game. And I haven't seen the latest on the wire, so I'm not sure where that currently stands. I thought that Miami would give Virginia Tech a lot better game, even though it was in a driving rain this past weekend. So I really don't know yet about Miami. Their first two games are great. They kind of threw up a stinker last week against Tech on the road, and now they're going to be back at home. So they'll be geeked. They'll be psyched for this. Oklahoma coming in, whether they have Bradford or not, I think Oklahoma's still going to be playing in a handle. So I think I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I'd probably have to go with OU only because I just don't know what we're getting out of Miami yet.
Yeah.
I think I need to see Miami another week or two. And granted, the schedule that Miami has had to start the season has just been, it's been unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Randy Shannon would run his team through a gauntlet like that to open the season when they need to get wins, and get people on their side. But does Miami have a chance? Absolutely. Absolutely, they got a shot. I just don't know whether or not that it will come at the expense of Oklahoma. So there you go, strippers. You get a reprieve now for at least a week. let's see. All right, what else we got here? Here we go. This comes from Tony, who says, do next year's draft picks have poison ivy, H1N1, or some other type of virulent or contagious disease? With the cutting of Prescott Burgess, I believe that is the third draft pick traded this year for players who have not played a regular season game with the Pats. Well, in Prescott Burgess's case, the Patriots get that pick back.
That was conditional, and I'm pretty sure it had to do with number of games played. Yeah. He played none. So I don't think there's anything to worry about there. But, the theory behind that email has some validity in the sense that Greg Lewis and Alex Smith were guys who the Patriots traded for in the offseason, I believe, fifth-round picks.
Right.
And they ended up being guys that they cut before the season began. And the Prescott Burgess one, I don't think we have to worry about. But it is sort of troubling sometimes when you see these draft picks essentially being wasted. But I also and they deserve negative marks, the coaching and personnel department does, on this sort of thing. I think what they do is they bring in a guy that they think is going to fit in well with their system. And the question is, basically, would you rather them not keep trying to bring in veterans who can help them this year, who they think can fit, even if they have to cut them? I mean, is it worth the risk? And it's a tough one. The more and more that they take these risks and guys end up being cut, the more you say, what are they doing here?
Yeah.
What are they doing here? They're making mistakes, but I think a guy like Alex Smith, they're willing to say, we screwed it up. We gave a fifth-round pick to Tampa Bay. We thought this was a guy that was going to come in and contribute and fit perfectly in our system. We thought we were getting good value for him. It didn't work out. They deserve to be criticized for those kinds of moves, especially when they pile up. But sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. In the grand scheme of things, a fifth-round pick is a fairly small price to pay if you think you're getting a guy that can contribute. But I think it was tough this offseason in the sense that they had both Greg Lewis and Alex Smith, guys they had high hopes for, and they end up getting cut, and fifth-round picks are gone. No, I don't think there's anything in particular about next year's draft class, as the emailer says, but they have gotten some draft picks returned to them The Raiders, obviously, with Seymour for the following year. Now, the next one in that Greg Lewis, Alex Smith category that I think we better hope ends up panning out is Derek Burgess. They gave up a third and a fifth for Derek Burgess, who has done nothing so far. And I think that's a key guy to watch, because if we still keep seeing very little impact out of him, then we're going to start talking about that third and that fifth being wasted. And I don't think that's what anyone wants to hear.
He also says, finally, to this point, not many personnel decisions made by Belichick without Pioli have been successful. We won't know about the draft for a couple of years, and the free agents' trades haven't worked out. I'm not at all saying Pioli was the reason for past success. I'm just wondering aloud if the Bill Belichick-Pioli give and take was more valuable than I had previously thought.
Yeah, well, it's only been one off season, and three games into this season is too early to say really what these personnel decisions they've made, what will end up happening. I think as far as the free agents they signed this offseason, it's way too – jury's still out. I mean, Lee Bodden and Sean Spring so far look to be an upgrade at cornerback than what they've had in the past. Certainly at linebacker, there's a lot of work that they need to do. This year's draft class, way too early to say. Way too early to say if this first draft without Scott Pioli's insight has been good, bad, somewhere in the middle. Way too early to say. Now, the Castle and Vrabel trade that Belichick made with Pioli, I thought that getting a second-round pick for Castle was a little low, especially when you add Vrabel in the mix.
Sure.
But let's be honest. I mean, Castle is not really panning out so far in Kansas City. They needed to get something for him. There wasn't any reason to pay him what he'd be getting paid to be a backup here this year. Just way too early to start talking about how this year's free agent trade and draft moves have panned out in relation to Pioli. Pioli was a factor, certainly, when he was here and in making personnel decisions. I still think Bill Belichick, made the bulk of them and signed off on all of them. So I think he still is a guy to be accountable for everything they did while Pioli was here and since Pioli's been gone. But too early to say how good or bad this year's offseason was.
Strippers, by the way, very quick to the punch here, sends a note. He says that Bradford got clearance from Dr. Andrews, Dr. James Andrews, who I guess was looking at his shoulder.
Okay.
But he says now he has to show he can make all the throws in practice.
Yeah.
Well, even without him, I still think that I would probably slightly favor Oklahoma. If he's completely healthy, there wouldn't be any doubt in my mind. Stripper sent you that?
He's an Oh, boy.
Doesn't mean I won't be rooting
Actually,
for Miami.
It's his birthday today. We got to be nice.
That's
to
true. Should be nice to
Is
him.
That right?
He's 40 today.
Is that right?
How about that? He officially joins the old man club today.
Oh, boy.
I think you guys should sing him happy birthday.
John, go ahead.
No. But that's okay. Happy birthday anyway.
There you go.
He'll have a happier birthday than most probably.
Yeah?
Just based on his lifestyle, probably.
Happy birthdays.
Yeah. I got to imagine. You're probably right.
I would kind of think so.
John, I wish I was able to talk more intelligently about the college game, and I enjoy a good college football game. I just never – every year the same thing happens. I want to get into college football more than I do.
But?
I only have so much – you kind of feel like you only have so much weekend time to devote to football, and I end up devoting most of it to the NFL because – I enjoy it more, and that's part of my job. It is my job.
Yeah.
I always wish when the season ends, I always wish I was more into the bowl games because I knew these teams better. When the draft time comes around, I always wish I had more of a knowledge base of watching these guys play. I thoroughly enjoy a good college football game, and I definitely try to keep tabs on the key storylines. I can't give you a breakdown of Oklahoma and Miami.
Not asking you to give the breakdown.
I know.
He asked
I'm
my opinion because because I cover college football.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
By the way, I will actually not be in here on Thursday before the fantasy lowdown. So
no
I apologize for missing
out
on your
program. Night game?
I have a Thursday night game.
Yeah. Anything good?
Colorado at West Virginia.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay.
Should I toot my own horn then? Because
you
can
did.
Actually, well, I know, I'll be doing the Colorado at West Virginia game Thursday, but Thursday night you can actually listen to it online. It's streamed for free at BigEast.tv.
BigEast.tv.
That's
okay,
right.
Well, maybe during the fantasy lowdown, I'll pump that up.
Thank you. if you care to listen. I mean,
sure.
The game will be on national television on ESPN, but if you don't have access to a TV or you're working or whatever, it'll be we're on XM Channel 203 and online at BigEast.tv.
There you go.
So there
you go.
Yeah.
Good game.
Yeah, this decent intersectional matchup.
Yeah.
Besides, I like going to Morgantown. It's fun.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Definitely. Never been down there.
Never been down there?
Never been down there. Never been to the state.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I'm sheltered.
I actually think Morgantown's a pretty nice college town.
Yeah.
A lot of people kind of somewhat derisively talk about Morgantown, you know, just because of the
fact that
the hillbillies come out of the woods, and you know, but that's okay. Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
You know why a toothbrush is called a toothbrush?
It must have something to do with the lack of teeth.
Well, yeah, thereabouts, because, you know, if it were made in West Virginia, it would be a teeth brush.
Ah, I gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you've heard that one before.
I gotcha.
I know. It's all right. We tell jokes. All right, Lund in South Dakota. I understand it's only one game, so I'm not saying book your Super Bowl tickets. Did you hear the comment from Tom Jackson at halftime about how the Patriots on Sunday reminded him of the three Super Bowl teams by using more of the two tight end packages and grinding it out rather than the spread offense the whole game? Do you think they'll continue to use a relatively same offensive game plan to protect Brady a little bit, maybe like when they play the Jets again? Hmm. I did not hear the comment, so I'm not entirely certain of the reference, but as I'm trying to remember back in the earlier Super Bowl days when they did run a lot of two tight end packages, to answer that, no. I think that they will specifically game plan for an opponent every week, and I think that was probably in the arsenal against Atlanta primarily to make certain that they controlled time of possession to keep the ball from out of Atlanta's hands as much as possible.
Well, the bottom line is, like you said, it's game plan. It's week to week. But I just think it was more, you know, what they did against Atlanta, it was more varied. Against the Jets, and that's what the plan going in, it's just what the plan was. They used three wide receivers and the same guys, Moss, Galloway, and Edelman, on every single play, and then one tight end, one running back. It got a little bit, it wasn't effective, and that's the bottom line. B, it was a little too predictable. Now, what they did against Atlanta, especially early on, they mixed up in every single way. Formations in terms of what the breakdown was of wide receiver, tight end, running back. Exactly who was playing. They used all of their wideouts. They used, well, with the exception of Michael Matthews, they used their tight ends, and they really used all their running backs. They mixed up the run, the short passing game, the deep passing game. Brady got good protection. The offensive line was opening holes. They didn't turn the ball over. I think it was a good game plan. I think the varied nature of it probably kept Atlanta at least off balance and at least questioning what's coming next. Whereas against the Jets, it was sort of became a predictable offense, and the Jets were able to sort of understand who was going to be in there before the snap, you know, before the play even was developing. So it struck me early against Atlanta that they're going with a more varied, diverse offensive attack, and I think we'll see that more often than not. I just don't think this is a team that I think they've got a deep enough stable of running backs, and they were good in the running game last year, that there's no reason for Tom Brady to throw the ball 50, 53, 55 times every game. And I think mixing it up with especially the positions that they're deep at, I think that'll be effective on offense.
All right. Got time for one more?
Sure.
All right. Alan writes, guys, what's up? Alan from Scotland, by the way. After watching the Jets game, I was a little concerned about some aspects of the Pats' play. However, I always kept believing we would sort it out. It was clear during the Falcons game that we are making good strides toward fixing a lot of our issues. I thought Brady was a lot closer to what we expect of him, but he's not quite there yet. There were still one or two overthrows, actually, I think four to be exact, which suggests he's releasing the ball a little early. However, he did step into the pocket a lot more and put some balls right on the money. There were a few dropped passes, particularly from Galloway, who I'm still not convinced about. The pass that would have been a touchdown if Galloway hadn't stepped out of the back of the end zone really annoyed me. Well, you and about 600,000 others.
And Tom Brady.
Because it took the momentum right out of our drive, and we had to settle for a field goal. Galloway should have more awareness about him than that. I'm not going to run Galloway out of town just yet, but he's on very thin ice for me. I was very impressed with Randy Moss. Obviously, this is not Mike Freeman's brother. He made some clutch plays, especially on third and fourth down. Also, the running game was very successful. Fred Taylor was outstanding. I was really impressed with our defense. Who would have thought we could hold the Falcons to 10 points? Turner couldn't get any yards. Gonzalez didn't get a catch until the fourth quarter, which was just amazing. One aspect of the game I was not impressed with is our red zone offense. Too many field goals, not nearly enough touchdowns. A lot of this is down to dropped passes, but there was also some suspect play calling. In the third quarter, we had gone for it on fourth and short on our own 24, I think it was,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
We had another fourth down and three at around the 45 in the same drive. We drove the ball right down to the six with a good mixture of runs and passes. We were running it right down their throats, and then we decided to go into the shotgun and second and go to the six. Why did we change it up when what we were doing up to that point was working so well? And then finally, I'm going to give props to the offensive line. Those guys were amazing. They've been heavily criticized this year. I think that criticism has been unfair. They opened up so many holes for the running game and didn't allow anybody anywhere near Tom Brady. Without them, we don't win this game. Overall, I think it was a good effort all around, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. The Ravens will be tough, but if we keep progressing the way we have been, we will be fine. P.S. I'm very disappointed we didn't get to see history with the Lions going 27 in a row. I'm not. I'm glad the Lions won. Anytime you can beat the Redskins, it's a good day.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, Allen is right there spot on with a lot of his points.
I pretty much right on target with the way I was thinking about this game. Defense, much better than I think anyone would have thought with the way that Atlanta offense came in. Red zone difficulties have to be short up. They scored points on every red zone trip, but they're going to need a couple of those to become touchdowns going forward. But overall, pretty good. I agree with him on overall the offense. I just didn't think they would realistically be at a high level, at a 2007 level just yet. And Brady, I think he looked ineffective in a lot of ways in that game. But overall, I think our friend from Scotland there is pretty much right on just about everything he said. And a tough game coming in against Baltimore. And before I head on out here, speaking of Baltimore, one note I came across, I was just looking at some stuff with the schedule going forward. If Denver beats Dallas this week, and they're hosting Dallas, Denver's kind of a hot team. I'm not overly impressed with Dallas by any means. So I think that could be a Denver win. The Patriots would go into each of their first five games this year
against an undefeated team. Yeah,
against an undefeated team.
That'd be kind of cool.
And so far they're obviously game one.
Yeah,
everyone's undefeated.
Right,
but the Jets were 1-0. They couldn't knock them off
unless you're Buffalo.
Unless you're Buffalo. 2-0. Atlanta's 2-0. They beat them. Baltimore 3-0 this week. They've got a chance. And then if Denver's 4-0, that's a pretty interesting streak to start out. But then they might go against two straight teams that are winless. Tennessee and Tampa.
Yeah. So, one extreme to the other, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, how about Patriots today? What are you setting up for this week?
Today we're still talking about some things from the game. Especially, we go a little bit in depth on that 4th-and-1 here from Fred Taylor, here from Sammy Morris on that 4th-and-1 and deep
at
in their own 24? Territory.
Yeah.
Exactly. Touch on Terdell Sands coming in and what that might mean. Is that insurance for Will Fork? What he might mean to the team.
And will the sun actually rise ever again in Foxborough if Terdell moves? So that's what I'm
right. Yeah.
He's a huge boy.
Huge
He's a
guy.
Huge,
and,
huge
and,
guy.
And yet another former Raider. They love those
How
former
about
Raiders.
That?
Jury's still out on them. But
Oakland East.
Exactly. So still touching on some stuff from that game, and we'll be getting full bore into the Baltimore game starting tomorrow.
All right, good stuff.
Thanks
B-Low.
Thank
All
you.
Right, Brian Lowe, Patriots today, and, of course, the Fantasy Lowdown. Let's pause here for a timeout. We've still got some time to catch your emails, webradio@patriots.com on Nitpick Tuesday, 508-543-7482, the phone number here in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, have lunch with the writers of Patriots Football Weekly on PFW in Progress.
I always say it this way, and honest to God, this is what you guys are. You are the view of football. It's just four guys having lunch.
PFW in Progress, Tuesday through Thursday from noon to 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush, but you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America, NA member FDIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Back inside the playbook here for a Tuesday, on a Nitpick Tuesday, Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Anybody remember that this was the 400th all-time victory in Patriots history? That's what Sunday's win over the Atlanta Falcons was. All-time win number 400, including postseason games. Might have seen it in a notes column somewhere, but I thought I'd point it out here because it's a rather significant note. It doesn't sound like a lot, but quite frankly, amongst the former old AFL teams, of which there are 8 teams in the former AFL, and how many of you can actually name those? Oakland, Denver, New England, Kansas City, San Diego, Buffalo, New York, and Tennessee, formerly Houston. So there you go. Those are the 8 AFL original franchises. And of the 8 teams, New England is just the 3rd to reach the 400-win plateau since 1960 when they started playing, right? 50th season. So they got 400 wins in their 50th season in their 777th overall game played. Right, Patriots record is 400 wins, 368 losses, 9 ties.
Wow!
The two teams, now here's the catch. Can you name the two teams that actually have more wins than the Patriots have? One of them I'm sure you can get. Denver. That's one. Yes, that's one.
To any Steeler fans listening, you all suck.
No.
Wow.
Not necessarily. Let's see. And the other team who has what might be an insurmountable lead in the win column, although, quite frankly, the way they've been playing over the last few years, you never know. Believe it or not, it's Oakland. Oakland is the winningest original AFL team. 431 wins and only 343 losses with 11 ties. Denver is second at 405, 359, and 10. Then the Patriots are third with 400 wins. And the team that's in fourth place and the only other team of the 8 that's above 500 is Kansas City. 389 wins, 362 losses, 12 ties. The rest of the order, San Diego is 373 and 383. Tennessee, of course, formerly Houston, 377 and 392. Buffalo, 363 and 400. And guess what? Those New York Jets are dead last. 341 wins, 412 defeats. That's the worst record of the four of the 8 original AFL teams. So you can see now, maybe you have a little bit better perspective as why Jets fans are going bonkers over their 3-0 start, huh? Anyway, I just kind of thought that was interesting because each of the teams really that we've talked about has had their own, you know, history, their own streak of success, you know, throughout their, you know, 50-year history now. And of those 8 teams, I mean, obviously you think, well, Oakland, they're probably not any good. But you had to remember, back in the 60s and 70s, they won everything. Kansas City, eh, they're not any good right now. Well, but you know what? Back in the 70s and in the 60s as well, they won everything. San Diego, they haven't been good until recently, but, you know, in the 60s, they won everything. You know, so the only, and of course, Buffalo reached 4 Super Bowls in a row that they lost. But, you know, they had a run there in the 80s and 90s where they were pretty dominant, and yet they're still 37 games under 500. The Jets have the 1 Super Bowl to the credit. They've largely been lousy, and, well, their record shows that they've largely been lousy. So every one of those teams, maybe with the exception of the Jets, maybe with the exception of the Titans, because they've never won an NFL championship either, although Houston won an AFL championship, you know, every one of those other teams has had some kind of success in the NFL. So an interesting story within the story is the Patriots win game number 400 in their franchise. And since, you know, Mr. Kraft has owned the team in 1994, the Patriots have 175 of those 400 victories. And that's more than any other NFL team in that time over the 15 years now, 16 years. That's incredible to think you've got almost half in only about, I don't know, a third of the time.
Actually, I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
It is amazing. Just kind of shows you the dominance, really, of this franchise over the last decade to a decade and a half in terms of what they've been able to do to turn it around. Some other news of note following Sunday's game. Tom Brady became the 27th player in NFL history to throw 200 career touchdown passes. That came on his pass to Chris Baker in the fourth quarter. He is the 4th fastest to reach 200 career touchdown passes, exceeded only by Dan Marino, Peyton Manning, and Brett Favre. Let's see. His 200 career touchdown passes, by the way, ranked 3rd overall behind Favre and Peyton Manning. Brady's now 69-2 when leading at halftime, 72-1 when leading after 3 quarters. Fred Taylor, with his 19-yard run in the second quarter on his way to a 105-yard day, passed Hall of Fame running back John Riggins into 15th place all-time on the NFL rushing list. Is there really a more underrated, undervalued, underappreciated running back than Fred Taylor? Now, I would have said this had he not been a Patriot, because I've always thought, you know, through his time with Jacksonville that, you know, Fred Taylor, he's got some impressive numbers, and yet he's toiling in relative obscurity in Jacksonville, Florida, for the Jaguars franchise. And yet he comes to New England, and he certainly worked into the mix. He showed us last week that he's got some life and some ability left in his legs. And I hope that people appreciate him, because we certainly don't know how long he's going to be around here. But I hope fans appreciate what this guy has meant to his profession. He's been a solid, if not spectacular, running back at times throughout his career. He's only made 1 Pro Bowl. 1 Pro Bowl. And yet he now has 11,447 career rushing yards. That's more than Riggins. It's more than guys like O.J. Simpson. He's 15th all-time in NFL rushing. You know, and he is... had one heck of a career. His 105-yard rushing day, by the way, his 49th career 100-yard game. Obviously first as a Patriot. His 49 career 100-yard games is 9th in NFL history. It's 2nd among active players. The only other active player with more than a total of 100-yard games than he has is Edgerrin James, now with Seattle, who has 57. I wouldn't have guessed that. But, yeah, Edgerrin James. The most 100-yard rushing games for a career belongs to Emmitt Smith, who has 78, Walter Payton, who has 77, and Barry Sanders, who has 76. Fred Taylor has 49. And he deserves to be in that kind of company, frankly. He's had a great career. Let's hope it extends at least 13 more weeks, shall we? Say that at least. Now, I opened up by talking a little bit more specifically about how my overall impressions of this team 2 days after the fact that they beat Atlanta was the fact that the defense is continuing to play much better than I think any of us really reasoned that they could or even thought that they could. The defense has allowed or entered the Atlanta game ranked fourth in the NFL in total defense. They haven't allowed more than 19 points in a game so far. That includes limiting Buffalo to 17 because we've got to remember there's a pick six involved there. The Jets 19, Atlanta to 10. Total of 50 points allowed through three games overall. That's an average of 16.7 per game. The 50-point total is the Patriots' third fewest through three games in their 10 seasons being coached by Bill Belichick. The only times that the Patriots have allowed fewer than 50 points through the season's first three games were 07 and 01, which, by the way, were, drum roll please, okay, Super Bowl seasons. Yes, I know they didn't win in 2007, but they still made it. So, you know, I don't know. If you're looking for omens, okay, there you go. There's one that you can kind of hang your head on a little bit. We mentioned last week that the Falcons were one of two teams in the NFL that had not yet ever played a game at Gillette Stadium. Now the Falcons have. The only team left that has never played a game at Gillette is Carolina. And, of course, the Patriots will get the Panthers on December the 13th here. But the Patriots now are 26-4 against first-time visitors to Gillette Stadium with the win. Second straight game, and we mentioned this in the opening hour of the program as well, second straight game in which the Patriots did not allow a sack. So including Sunday, the Patriots and their offensive line, of which several of you have written in about today, the Patriots and their offensive line have not allowed a sack in their last 134 pass attempts. That is the longest current streak in the NFL. 134 pass attempts for Tom Brady between sacks and counting. Longest current streak in the NFL. They've allowed just one sack overall this year on 142 total attempts. The winning streak against the NFC continues. We mentioned this in the opening hour of the program. 16 straight now, longest streak ever for one team in a conference over teams from the other conference. Again, we've got a lot of NFL firsts here that we've been talking about today, which I think is actually kind of cool. You know, this is what we do. We try to go inside the stories here and in between the lines. Randy Moss, of course, this is the same Randy Moss that Mike Freeman thinks was dogging it against Atlanta. But he's off to his best career start with 26 receptions through three games. That's more than he's ever had through three games in any other season in his career. Previous best was 22 through three games in 2007. He got his 61st career 100-yard receiving game. 15 of those have come as a member of the Patriots. By the way, when Moss has a 100-yard receiving game, guess what the Patriots' record is? Yeah, let's say it all together now. 15-0. Again, just numbers that help tell the story here, kids. If Randy Moss is having a big day, chances are the Patriots are going to win. It is a fact. He also, by the way, had his 10th career double-figure catch game with 10 catches or more. It was his second already of this year. He had, remember, a career high tying 12 in the season opener against Buffalo. Let's see, what else? Steve Gostkowski, you know, here's a guy that has just been with his team now, you know, 2-3 years, and already he's passed Stanley Morgan on the all-time scoring list in Patriots history. Had 14 points total on the day against Atlanta. He now has 418 career points. He has moved past Stanley Morgan into fifth place all-time in New England scoring. Tied his career high with 4 field goals against Atlanta as well. Pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. So anyway, just giving you some of the stats between the lines in reaction to the game on Sunday. And now heading toward next Sunday with the Baltimore Ravens. Of course, we'll spend the majority of our time over the course of Wednesday and Thursday on the programs here specifically talking about the Ravens. By the way, I can tell you that in tomorrow's program, Jerry Sandusky, who is the Ravens radio play-by-play guy, he's going to join us in our 3 o'clock hour in tomorrow's show. So appointment listening for you kids as we'll get the inside scoop from the voice of the Ravens, Jerry Sandusky. Approximately 3:15 tomorrow inside the playbook. So that we'll dive right in. Eric Scalavino from PFW will rejoin us on Wednesday as well, and we'll get into some of that. Let me finish up here with a couple of other emails. LT from Adelaide, Australia says, it's nice to get back in the winner's list after last week's debacle in the Meadowlands. Just wondering if you agree that Brady looks a little bit like Matt Cassel did last year. I know that Cassel had Welker and Moss, but Brady with new receivers in Galloway and Edelman seems like there's not quite that familiarization at this stage. It's an interesting way to put it, and I see what you're saying, and there's not, it's a little similar because you're right. With Cassel, it came grudgingly. He says, it's also hard to quantify what Wes Welker brings to the table, but had he been fit against the Jets, I would go so far as to say we win that game. If Welker plays this week, we win. What was that? Was that?
Something somebody just sent me.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever it was, everybody else just heard it too. Okay. I was about to say, I'm glad it wasn't obscene or anything. He says, if Welker plays this week, we win against the Ravens, but if he doesn't, we lose. Agree? I don't know that I'm willing to go that route. I'll be honest with you. You know, and I mentioned this to the guys at PFW at the tail end of their show before we started here today. I'm very concerned about this Sunday. I'm not ready yet to make a prediction, but I am very concerned about this Sunday with Baltimore. LT says, it was a good win against a high-quality opposition in the Falcons, but let's not go overboard the other way, unlike last week when everyone thought the sky was falling. It's too early to say, but the 09 Pats look like a team that'll grind out wins early in the season. As Tom Brady starts to get back in the groove, I agree that I think this team will be running on all cylinders at the end of this season. We have, you know, yet to see if that will happen, but at least it certainly sounds good, and I can't disagree with it right now, LT. Dan in New York. I went to the game this weekend with my 6-year-old son, and we had an excellent time, especially last year I took him to the Miami game. When we were going into the pro shop, we met Robert Kraft, who was shaking hands, and my son thanked him for putting a great team on the field. Your 6-year-old son thanked Mr. Kraft and said, thank you for putting a great team on the field? Well, your 6-year-old son, it must be just like wise beyond his years. I'm really impressed. Just kidding you. I could tell that we were going to have a good game when we saw Brady yelling and shaking his arms at the crowd in the end zone during the pregame warm-up lap to get them excited. The defense looked good, and you could see how pumped up they were with all the dancing on the field during the TV timeouts. Did I not mention that in the opening part of the show today? I believe that I did. Yes, I think I did. They really did that. That was very impressive. Oh, can we get a little bit of that, Jason, before we wrap up the show here, just so we can all leave the program dancing here today?
Sure.
Okay. He's going to call it up for us. This is what the players were all dancing to, by the way, during those TV timeouts. And I don't know the name of the song. I don't know the artist. I have heard it before because my son listens to some of this music. And I've heard it before, obviously, here at the stadium. Yes.
It's called Put On by Young Jeezy.
Okay, it is Young Jeezy. All right, I wasn't going to say, because I'm frankly not entirely and completely up on that stuff. Young Jeezy. All right, so there you go. Put Up.
He says, Put On.
Oh, Put On. Thank you. Put Up, Put On. Put Out. Dan says, I felt that it was the secondary that stopped the passing game this week because there was not much pressure from the DL and the linebacking core in the pass rush. Wondering what you thought. Yeah, the secondary did a good job. I thought the defensive line also did a very good job. More so than maybe you thought, Dan. But quite frankly, the secondary had a great game. But I thought the line did enough to flush Ryan out of the pocket, force him to throw away some passes. And really, even though they didn't sack him, that's all you needed was him to rush throws. Because you don't want him to have time to find those big receivers, especially guys like Tony Gonzalez down the field. Dan, thanks for the email. It's from Dan in New York. All right, some good stuff today. Good emails. Thanks for the emails on Nitpick Tuesday. All right, well, we're going to leave you then on the program today. By the way, is Shop Talk coming up next? No. They're not doing it? Oh, that's tomorrow. That's Wednesday. Okay. Got my days mixed up. For some reason, I thought it was the middle of the week here. All right. So, tomorrow on the program, Inside the Playbook, Eric Scalavino from PFW will be with us in the opening hour. Jerry Sandusky, the voice of the Baltimore Ravens, he will join us in the second hour of the program tomorrow. Pats are 2-1, and the Baltimore Ravens coming to town. But there's some emotion. There's a little feeling. There's a little energy that's brewing there, especially with this defensive unit that may be a little better than we originally thought it could be. This is what Brandon Merriweather and company were dancing to during the TV timeouts as the music blared over the loudspeakers here at Gillette Stadium. And we'll let you do whatever you need to do. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. Mañana.